It's home to the Statue of Liberty, Central Park, Yankee Stadium, and Broadway. But for one young man growing up in the city that never sleeps, it was more like a nightmare. This is Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, and I'm Ryan Dobson, along with your host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. And today we're going to hear the true story that will keep our listeners on the edge of their seats, or sit in their driveways, whichever fits, until it's over. Our guest, by way of a recorded message, is Mr. Bill Reiser. Bill grew up on the streets of New York City, and he had it rough. He's going to tell us a little bit more about that, and we will soon hear that the Lord had his hands on Bill's life, whether he knew it or not. Bill is currently a pastor, and he's the director of recovery ministries at Heartline Community Church in Rockford, Illinois. With that, here now is Bill Reiser on today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
So how you doing? Listen, you can make me feel really welcome because I am from New York City. And if I ask you a question, how you doing, you can respond back by saying, no, how you doing? So how you doing? I'm doing all right. Man, it's good to be here. This has been just a blast this weekend. Just excited to be with Bro again. And we're just so grateful to be here. So humbled to just stand up here. And our story is a story of grace, the story of how God would never give up on you. And he wouldn't give up on me. I did grow up in East Harlem, right in the middle of Spanish and Black Harlem, was this 4 to 6 block little Italian community right in New York City. And my mom raised me and my two sisters up by herself. We're all a year apart, me and my two sisters, because my dad left when I was 1 year old. I never saw my dad. And my mom was a full-blooded Italian person, and my dad wasn't. And it was a time of great racial prejudice. So it was tough for me growing up in my neighborhood because I got picked on a lot as a kid because I wasn't a full-blooded Italian. And it was my own peers. It was the Italian guys in my neighborhood, dangerous guys that just, you know, they were just always coming after me. I was always fighting for my life. And when I was 12 years old, I went through a series of events that basically determined just shaped a pattern of behavior in my life that was so detrimental for so many years. And it just basically shaped who Billy Reiser was. For instance, at 12 years old, I came down a building one day, and for me, getting introduced to sex was getting thrown into a room with a prostitute, because the guys that were in that hallway that threw me into that room would have done some really bad things to me. These are guys that killed people for a living. And then there was another time I was coming down a building, and there was this Italian guy there, and he was a grown-up guy, and he was involved in the mafia, and he met me there at knife point. And he had a knife right on my throat, and he attacked me. And he attacked me sexually, did some really horrible things to me. And then later on that year, there was this guy in my neighborhood named Johnny. And this is the guy that killed people. And everybody knew that's what his job was. We've seen him kill people. We've seen dead bodies before. We've seen what he's capable of doing. And this was a guy that when he told you to do something, you just did it. And he came up to me and said, Bill, take this $100 bill and go into this building, and there are going to be two guys there. They're going to give you a package and some change. So here I am doing drug deals at 12 years old for this guy, Johnny. Now I get the job done. And about a week later, Johnny comes up to me again, says, do it again. Gives me another $100 bill. And I got to go meet the same guys. But this time, while I'm in the building, I give the $100 bill to the two drug dealers, and they realize that I just gave them a counterfeit $100 bill. And I'm in a busted drug deal. And immediately, two guns were drawn. And these guys were so angry. I had one drawn right there in my head, one in my heart. And for some reason, those guns wouldn't go off. Looking back on it now, I know that God was protecting me in that room, in that hallway. And after about a moment or so, I started to gather myself. And I started talking. And I said something to the effect of, hey, listen, this isn't for me. This is for a guy named Johnny. I said, you know who Johnny is. And everybody knew who Johnny was. Johnny sent me in here. And if I don't come out of here, he's going to come looking for me. And if you guys do anything to me, he's going to come looking for you. And so not only did I walk out of there with my life, but I also walked out of there with the package and the change as well, too. And I knew a couple of things were going to happen that day. One, I was probably going to be in sales for most of my life. God had given me great negotiating skills. But the other decision I made was I wasn't going to deal in drugs. I don't know about you, but I just didn't think that getting involved in life-threatening situations was a cool thing. And I just didn't want to deal in drugs anymore. But as far as using drugs and abusing drugs, that would be a lifestyle that I started even at that age as far as drinking and having sex and doing drugs. I did every drug under the sun, basically every drug except heroin because I was just afraid of needles. And I remember doing so much cocaine at my sister's wedding one time that I lost my eyesight for a week. I just lived life in the fast lane. And that would be a lifestyle that started as a young kid. But now I had a tough thing to do, and I had to tell Johnny that I wasn't going to do any more drug deals for him ever again. And I remember that conversation I had with Johnny. I got up right in his face and I said, "Listen, these guys are on to us." I said, "I almost got killed in there." I said, "I don't care if you kill me right now. I'm never, ever going to do another drug deal for you ever again." And Johnny looked at me and he said, "All right." And he never asked me again to do another drug deal for him. And that was good and that was bad. You see, it was good because I lived to tell about it, but it was bad because I lived for the rest of my life from that point moving forward. With every difficult situation that I ever had in my life, I learned to live in that situation with bitterness, rage, and anger. I was just a bitter, angry person, and the people around me felt it the most. That's how I would live my life, and that's how I played basketball. I had a tremendous gift to play basketball, and the only problem with that is I thought that that was something that I sort of developed out of my own self-determination. I never realized that it was a gift from God. You don't just practice to jump 44 inches. I wound up going to a high school where I was one of four white kids out of 2,500 students in my high school in my neighborhood, Benjamin Franklin High School. But I was the man. I was the king of the hill. I was a legend in New York City, and I was for surely going to play in the NBA. I could do things. I could go to different parts of the neighborhood. I could go to the west side of Harlem where guys in my neighborhood, Italian guys, couldn't go to, because if you were white, you couldn't go to the west side of Harlem. But people knew who I was when I walked there because I had a reputation as being one of the best basketball players in the streets of New York. So like when you hear stuff like President Clinton walked on the streets of Harlem, trust me, he didn't. Okay? He would have got killed back then. But I wound up getting recruited by every Division I school basically there was in the country. Just tons of schools were calling me. And my high school coach convinced me to go to Centenary College in Shreveport, Louisiana. And I had a great year playing as a freshman. Now, all during this time, the drinking, the drugs, the womanizing is completely out of control. And a week before my sophomore season, about 7 days before the season started, I was out with a bunch of guys out drinking. And I fell and I busted my knee. And I had to have major surgery on my knee, and they weren't scoping back then. And that operation was in November, and they tried putting me back in the lineup in January, and I wasn't 100% healthy. So I said, "I'm out of here. I'm leaving." And I actually left on Billy Reeser poster night. I just went home to New York. Actually had a pro agent at the time who convinced me to go to Eastern Kentucky University. They gave me a full scholarship to play there. He said, "It's a Division I school. You'll sit out a year, you'll play 2 years, and you'll make it to the NBA. See, that was my dream. That was my ticket to get to the NBA. Now, real quick about my basketball career. When I got to Eastern Kentucky University, history would repeat itself over and over again my junior and senior year, where I had gotten hurt a week before both of those seasons, and I wouldn't play much during the season, and I just had a bad attitude, and I was at odds with the coach, and so it was, my basketball career just disintegrated in college. But what I want to tell you about when I got to Eastern Kentucky University is that when I first got there, I met this lady there named Carolyn. And when I first met Carolyn, she was someone who was the complete opposite of me. She was someone who was wholesome, she was pure, she was someone who was honest, and I wasn't anything close to being any of those things. But when I saw her, something drew me to her. I couldn't put my finger on it back then. Looking back on it now, I knew that God had a great plan for our lives, and he was drawing me to her. So we started to date, and we started dating exclusively. And when we finished school at Eastern Kentucky University, we decided to go to New York, and immediately we had decided to get married. Now, when we had decided to get married, it was very important for us to get married in her hometown. And what I didn't tell you about Carolyn was Carolyn is from the hills of Kentucky. She's from the mountains. Have you ever heard of Mayberry? And so this is really, really country. So my family is coming down for this wedding because we have to have it in her hometown. All my family is from my mother's side, which are all full-blooded Italian people, but they're not normal Italian people like some Italians that are here today. They're the sociably unacceptable Italian people that you never take out in public. You just don't want to be around these people. So I got the whole cast that's there. I got my Uncle Tony. He's got ruffles on his tuxedo. His last name's Esposito. Works for the sanitation department. I mean, you get the picture, right? And so his wife, Aunt Gilda, she's 80 years old today. She's confined to a wheelchair. She's a professional kleptomaniac. I mean, that's just, she stole a turkey at a buffet line in her big bag one time. I mean, I'm serious. I mean, it's crazy. But anyway, she's there, and my whole family's there, and they've never been to Kentucky before. They're in rural Kentucky. It's just an amazing thing. And so I didn't realize it at the time, but we got married in a small church. And in these country churches, maybe it's just in eastern Kentucky, I didn't realize you got pre-marriage counseling 15 minutes before you got married. But we had a great wedding day, but, you know, in all honesty, I was way in over my head. Because I thought I was in love with Carolyn, but I didn't know what love was. I didn't know what it meant to have a covenant relationship, to have a covenant marriage. You see, I didn't have a relationship with Jesus Christ then, and I didn't have that. But I just figured I would just give it my best shot. I would try and be faithful. I would just, you know, be a good husband. But let me give you some insight into this lady that God hooked me up with. After about 2 years of never, ever touching a basketball, I picked up a ball one day, and 2 weeks later, I'm playing in these pro tournaments again, the Rucker tournament and all these tournaments. And I'm starting to play pretty good. And I was playing in a game in the South Bronx one night, and before the game, I noticed a guy that just didn't look right to me. I just felt something about this guy that just didn't feel right. And I had a friend of mine named Jimmy who used to come to love watch me play. And sure enough, in the middle of the game, the two got into an altercation. And I ended that altercation the way I normally ended altercations, with bitterness and rage, and threw him off my friend. And it was a big fight there was that night, and they broke up. And I didn't think anything of it. But at the end of the night, when my friend Jimmy walked to his car, that guy followed Jimmy and shot him 5 times at point-blank range. And my friend Jimmy lived to tell about it. And I also noticed that there was a crew that night, and that guy sent a crew to shoot me down. There was about 4 or 5 guys behind me, and he sent a crew, and I knew that they were behind me. They were just following behind me, and I didn't want to turn back, but they were right behind me. And again, no shots were fired. And I didn't know what happened, but the next morning I realized what happened. I got a call, and I went to the police station and found the guy looking through some mugshots. They wound up arresting him later that week, and he confessed to everything, confessed that he sent a crew to shoot me down as well, too, and he did some serious time. But the reason why I tell you that story is that night, when I came home, Carolyn came running to me and said, and she had no idea what was going on, and she said, "I don't know what came over me, but God just told me to pray for your protection all night long, and I've been praying for you all night long." And let me tell you what that did for me. It went in one ear and out the other. Okay, because God was trying to get my attention, but I wouldn't have anything to do with it. And let me say this about Carolyn. She wasn't even walking close with God at that time. Okay? But you know, that's the amazing thing about God. We may not walk close with him, but he always walks close with us. And the drugs were escalating. The drinking was escalating. I made her miserable. I started even blaming her that my basketball career was over. It's amazing how we blame people that we love the most, that are closest to us, when we have our own setbacks and failures. But I did that, and I was just looking for answers. And I started hanging around with people I shouldn't have hung around with. And one person was a female. And before you knew it, I was having an affair just because of a wrong turn I made one day. And my life is spinning out of control. I'm holding on by a thread. See, I'm living this double life that this voice, this enemy, would always tell me that if she ever found out about this life that you're living, she would kill herself. She'd have a nervous breakdown. She wouldn't be able to handle the truth. And so I lived this double life of coming home and being a husband, and I was being a father, because 20 years ago on April Fool's Day, she had given birth to our daughter, Kristen, who was a major blessing in our lives. But my family wasn't a priority to me. Myself, my basketball, that was a priority. And then Carolyn came up to me one day and said, "Bill, I've had enough in New York City. I want to raise our daughter in Kentucky." And I thought, this is great. Timing is perfect. I could run away from everything. But you know what? A new location only meant old habits resurfacing with new friends to do them with. I just found new girls to have affairs with. And now my life is really spinning out of control. But when we got to Kentucky, Carolyn found this church, Southland Christian Church, where she just loved going. And every time that she would go, she would have people pray for me, not even knowing what was going on in my life. And I didn't even realize it, but there were literally hundreds of people in Lexington, Kentucky, praying for my salvation and other things. And obviously, when God gets involved, things are going to come to a head. And they did for us, because one day Carolyn found out about some of the things that I was doing. She found out about one of the affairs, and when she did, I told her about everything else. I knew I'd lost my marriage. I knew that everything that I had was completely gone in just a matter of days. There was no reconciling this marriage because we were done. And so she was devastated. I mean, for 2 weeks, we couldn't have a conversation at all because of how torn up she was. And I thought she was going to kill herself or have a nervous breakdown. And the only thing that we can really agree to do in a matter of 2 or 3 weeks was simply have a meeting of how we were going to discuss the details of getting divorced, because there was no fixing this. This was completely gone. So before the meeting, she does something smart once again. She goes to church and gets and asks people to pray for her. She just didn't play fair. And so and a pastor that day prayed a simple prayer over her. And he prayed that God would give her peace that passes all understanding. And on her drive home, she'll tell you on the exact spot on Harrodsburg Road in Lexington, Kentucky, between the church and our house, where the Spirit of the living God who lives and breathes today just invaded that car that she was in and gave her an overwhelming sense of his peace. And he just invaded her life, because when she walked through that door, that was not my wife that walked through that door. Because she came in, she stood up tall, she even had a smile on her face, and this was freaking me out, because this is not my wife. But when she started to talk, I knew that this was God talking to me. Because she looked me straight in the eye, and she said, "Bill, God would never give up on you. And I'm not going to give up on you." And she said, "God can forgive you for anything that you've ever done." And then she said this, "And so can I." She said, "I don't know if I could ever forget some of the things that you've did, but I'm willing to give it a try if you're willing to give your life to Jesus Christ." Now, friends, I knew at that moment that God was calling me home. And I saw my whole life pass before me. And I saw where God was there protecting me and pursuing me all this time. And I just didn't know it. The only thing I told God that night before I surrendered my life to him was that I'll do anything that you want me to do, just as long as I know it's you. And friends, what I need to tell you today is that ever since that day and ever since that decision that I made to accept Jesus Christ as my personal Lord and Savior, God has changed everything. You see, I was loving God. I was experiencing God. But you know what I was missing? His peace. I read about it. I believed it. But I didn't have God's peace in my life. And you know why? Because I still had some unfinished business with God to do. And that unfinished business was about this man when I was 12 years old that sexually abused me. You see, I never was able to forgive that person. Never able to do it in my own strength. And even as a Christian, I walked around thinking it would be a good thing if this guy died one day. I know guys that'll kill people for a living. I can get this guy whacked for $1,500, okay? Because there are friends of mine that'll do that, okay? There are friends of mine that'll do it for nothing. And I just, these were thoughts of mine. Okay, because I couldn't, because of what he did to me. But then again, I just told God that day that I would do anything that he wanted me to do, just as long as I knew it was him. And I remember going to my first Promise Keeper event with about 60,000 guys in Indianapolis. And I remember a speaker getting up and addressing all the guys there. And he said, is there any guy that's bitter towards someone that's done something to them? Because if you are, and you've never been able to just surrender that to God, God wants you to know today that, one, he wants to use you, and that, two, he wants to give you his peace. And immediately I thought of that guy who attacked me. And I remember praying a prayer to God that day, saying, God, forgive me for not forgiving him. And something amazing happened when I started praying that prayer. A burden for that man's soul came over me. And as I was praying for forgiveness for holding on to that grudge, I started praying for that man's salvation. And something amazing happened after I prayed that prayer. I truly felt God's peace for the first time in my life. Something else happened too that was quite amazing. All thoughts of bitterness and rage and anger seemed to just slowly melt away. And I just became a much more gentle person and just much more just a kinder person. See, I made a decision that day. I had two choices, the freedom of forgiveness versus the bondage of bitterness. And I was living my life as a Christian in the bondage of bitterness until the day that I forgave that man and everyone else who has offended me. And God has set me free. And later that year, during Christmas, my daughter wanted me to read scriptures to her on Christmas Eve. And it was a great Christmas Eve because I was reading some passages out of the Bible, and she started crying, and she looked at me in tears, and she said, Daddy, I used to be so afraid of you. This is my own daughter talking to me. I got no comeback for that. My jaw just dropped. You know, your kids know who you are. They know where you've been. They know where you are today. They know where you're going tomorrow. My daughter knew me like a book. And so she called me up later. A couple years later, she went to her first CIY, Christ in Youth Camp. She called me crying late one night. She said, Daddy, I want you to know how much I know how much you love me. I want you to know that tonight. And then she said this, but what's even more amazing than that is that God loves me even more. See, for my daughter, God is real because she saw God transform us. So if you're here this morning and you've heard this talk and you've never made a decision to surrender your life to Jesus Christ, I want you to know that that's God speaking to you today. And he still loves you. No matter what you've done, you need to know that you can never, whatever you can do, God will never stop loving you. And all he wants is a relationship with you. And he's going to pursue you with his love forever and ever. And I want to challenge you today just to surrender your life to Jesus Christ. And I also want to just challenge you today to surrender any feelings of bitterness or unforgiveness that you may have. I imagine, and I know this, whatever was done to me, there's probably some more horror stories this morning with some of you, and you've been holding on to that thing. And I know God wants you to surrender it to him because he's the only one that can set you free from that. And he wants to give you his peace, and he wants to use you, and he wants to bless you because he loves you. Thank you so much.
What a transformation we've heard today on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk with our guest, Mr. Bill Reiser. And what a gentle and yet powerful story of God drawing an entire family to himself. God has truly redeemed his life and the lives of all of his family. The Lord cares for them so much, and I just love hearing stories like this. They serve as reminders that God is a God of redemption and grace, and there's nothing we can do that will separate us from His love. What Bill just said about God pursuing us, and the fact that there's nothing we can do to make Him stop loving us, is all true. I know there are people listening right now who have been impacted by this message and have just yielded to Jesus Christ. And if that's you, if you've made that decision and you want to learn more about a relationship with Christ, please call us. Our number is 877-732-6825. We would love to send you a Gospel of John and pray with you to get you started on this journey. You could also contact us at drjamesdobson.org or on our Facebook page. And if you'd like to read more of Bill Reiser's story, he's written a book called Vertical Leap, in which he shares greater detail about his journey. Once again, you can find that on our website at drjamesdobson.org or call us at 877-732-6825. Thanks for joining us, and we invite you back next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.